Welcome to episode number 10 of the Pouncecast. My name is Matt Menzel, being joined by Milwaukee women's soccer head coach Kevin Boyd, who just completed his second season as the ninth head coach in program history. And coach, I want to start the podcast by just kind of going back in time, recapping the 2023 season, a year that would see the Panthers for a second consecutive year win 12 games, won the Horizon League regular season championship, won the Horizon League tournament championship for a sixth consecutive year, and met Wisconsin in the first round of the NCAA tournament. When you go back and look at the 2023 season, how would you go about summarizing the campaign?
Well, we challenged the team quite a bit more this year, so our non-conference schedule was significantly tougher than it has been in the past, certainly than it was the year before. We went to Notre Dame, who was number three in the country at the time. We pulled off a very gritty tie in that game, so they were outstanding, as number three should be, and we just showed what we are, which is a kind of roll up your sleeves, get after it sort of team, and never say die. And we scored a goal in the last 30 seconds of the game to tie it 2-2, and it held on, and it was kind of a rainy day in South Bend, and we were happy to get out of there with the tie, and that was a good result. And then we went to Arkansas, who was number eight in the country at the time we played them. They were very, very good, and they beat us, and they were better than us on the day, but still a good game. Now, we had Minnesota at home. We had Denver at home, who's won six of their last, I think, 6 years straight of their conference tournament. Sure. We played some very good teams. SIUE, we were at their place. They had won 3 years in a row. So we really challenged ourselves quite a bit more in terms of the non-conference and came out of it pretty well. And then, you know, got into conference and went undefeated, and we're happy with that. We had three ties in a row during conference, which is a little odd for us, but we also had some key starters out during that time, and we still should have won those games, but managed to go undefeated and then obviously won the conference tournament. So pretty happy with the year as a whole.
You talk about that non-conference slate. Do you feel like you got everything you wanted to get out of that non-conference in preparation for the Horizon League?
No, in terms of results, the Denver game we tied 3-3. I mean, a high-scoring affair, and I think we doubled them in shots, and you know, we should have put them away, and we didn't. To their credit, Denver scored a couple of spectacular goals, some really good goals, but we should have put them away earlier. So we're disappointed in that result. But on the flip side, we got a good tie at Notre Dame, so we're on the other side of it at that one. We dropped the Marquette game 1-0. Just didn't play very well the first half against them, and it was 0-0. Played well in the second half. Hit the crossbar, hit the post three times, and lost 1-0, right? So it's soccer for you sometimes. So those were the ones that we felt like we left on the table. But other than that, I like the way that we responded to a challenge in terms of what we gave them in the non-conference.
You talk about, hey, that's soccer, and you look at the Horizon League Tournament Championship. You guys beat Northern Kentucky, Brooke Parnello with the PK in the 81st. Again, they went to the Panthers plus 10 in shots, but again, a 1-0 final. How competitive in your mind was that final?
I thought it was very close. I credit to Northern Kentucky. I thought they were good. They were better than they were when we played them earlier in the year. I thought they caused us some problems, but I do think we were the better team on the day. There are some situations we should have scored. One that we all think was a goal still that didn't get called a goal, and then came back for the PK and put it away. And some games like that, oftentimes tournament finals are going to come down to set pieces. So, we earned a PK. It was a legitimate handball on the box, so good PK. And Brooke was, ice in her veins and stepped up and put it away.
And with that victory, extended the unbeaten streak to 12 consecutive matches, out of the NCAA tournament in Madison, taking on a pesky Wisconsin Badger bunch. And that game was scoreless until about the 60th minute. When you look at that matchup, ultimately, what was the deciding factor?
I just, on the day, they were better than us. I mean, just when I look at it, we were good the first 15 minutes. And I thought we were on our front foot going at them. And then, oddly enough, one of our impact players, Kat, takes a ball to the face and enough of an impact that we needed to pull her out the field and have her evaluated. And something happened to us. We just didn't respond well to that. So when she came out, they started getting the run on us. And when she was cleared and put back in, we never really found the game after that. right? So, you know, at the end of it, was Wisconsin the better team on the day? Yeah, I think they were, right? I don't think we played our best soccer, and I thought Wisconsin played well. You know, what I'm looking at is, okay, we were number 33 in the RPI, right? In theory, the top 32 teams get byes and get protected at home, right? Well, if we just move up one spot and get a bye, we're at home playing somebody 33 or worse, right? Instead of going to someone else's place and playing number 12 in the country. Right. I mean, what have we played? We played Wisconsin number 12. The year before, we were at Michigan State number 8. Right. And that's what we faced the 2 years that we've gone so far. And it's because we have not gotten our RPI in the top 32. And that's got to be a focus that we have. It's part of why we're really challenging ourselves in the non-conference. Right. Because if we can play teams with winning records and top 50 opponents and get some results against them, we can get our RPI high enough that hopefully we're protected and we have a home game that, you know, can allow us maybe to get that first win under our belt and build from there.
Of course, nothing's, you know, finalized or official yet, but can we expect then an even more challenging non-conference slate here in 2024?
Yeah. Next year's schedule is very difficult. I think we open at Xavier, then we're at Ohio State, then we're at Valpo, so first three on the road, and, you know, all three of those were tournament teams last year, so those are good. We come home, host our tournament, we'll have Minnesota again, and then UIC, so a local opponent, and then we've got Wisconsin at home, Harvard at home, and then Marquette at their place, so the rival game. So that's our non-conference. I would say, accurately, five of the eight of those were in the playoffs this year, and Xavier top 25, Ohio State top 30, Wisconsin obviously was 12, Harvard I think was 19. So I mean, we're challenging ourselves.
Jeez, and we'll talk more about the preparation for 2024 as we go along. But you talk about impact players, and one of those impact players, and there are many on this roster, Kayla Rollins, of course, a first-team All-Region, named the Horizon League Player of the Year, the Offensive Player of the Year, 12 goals, couple of assists at one time, had scored goals in 5 consecutive and 8 of 9 matches. How good was Kayla, and especially out of the air this past season?
Yeah, I mean, she's very good in the air. And what I like about her is when she goes up for a ball in the air, you can see her complete focus on putting the ball away and putting it in a certain place. She's not just going up to put her head on it. She's going up to drive that ball into the goal. So there's a big difference there. But, you know, when I evaluate her in the last 2 years and her growth, it's been tremendous. I mean, last year, she kind of came into her own scoring goals, found a little niche for herself on the front line, and then came into this year with some confidence. But this year, she had to solidify who she was. You know, I think there's a tendency when you have a year where you're scoring goals, suddenly you start to think, okay, I'm this type of player, and you alter the type of player you are as opposed to the one that got all those goals. So early on, we had to talk to her about, look, this is who you are. This is who you are, to make sure she was playing the way that she produces goals as opposed to changing her style because suddenly she felt like Messi or you know, Cristiano Ronaldo or somebody, right? So we had to keep her dialed in on that. And then she took an injury and was out for a little while, which was tough for us. We struggled getting goals while she was out. And then when she came back, she had to also get her mentality back to scoring goals. So it's not like, hey, you're back on the field, boom, you're back into it. You get back on the field and you got to find your mentality again. So really, really good year for her. If I got it right, I think she had 12 goals, which is a tremendous year. And we expect, you know, obviously to have her to have another good year in her senior year.
Did you notice teams approach her differently, especially toward the second half of the season with some of the numbers she had? How they, you know, did they double team her? Did they mark up on her closer? How did teams approach her?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that she's in their scouting report, and they start worrying about her quite a bit. We probably had 3 players that were in everybody's scouting report, Kayla being one of them coming off the right side, and their worry about her in the air, but also her just getting loose in the box, so trying to keep track of her. You know, Kat Van Boeven, obviously, on the other side, with her left foot and her speed, I know everybody was worried about her. They were trying to put her under her right foot, and, you know, natural things you would would do. And then Laney's been in the scouting report now in conference for 2 years. And, you know, every time she touches the ball, I hear people yelling double, cover, you know, don't dive in, stand right. You know, I hear that from the opponent start yelling as soon as she gets near the ball. And those are just compliments to those mm-hmm. players.
How great of a facilitator is a player like Laney Higgins to the attack? You know, look at her numbers this season, 6 goals, 6 assists. But it just seemed like even if she's not getting a goal or an assist, she has a touch in the attacking third.
Yeah, I've said since I think the second week of indoor when I got here that Laney was special. Right? She is so good on the ball. She's a little bit slinky on the ball where she can just slide by people and get through things. Her defending has improved tremendously to the point that she's now also impactful in her defense, which, you know, is not normally what you get from a 10. And then her ability to penetrate through the back line is something that we still need to explore more. She did it really well because her relationship with Haley the year before was so interchangeable, it allowed her to get through. You know, we didn't quite get that as well this year, but what we got was kind of that center mid maestro who could get the ball and break pressure and play people in.
Let's take a look at your sophomore class from this past year, and some that are true sophomores, others that are redshirt sophomores, players like Elizabeth Reese, Anna Champagne when it came to the back line, Stephanie Rosinos, Molly O'Regan. List goes on and on. Were you pleased with the progress that group made? Certainly, considering that looking into the future, that's going to be a big part of what this team does, I'm venturing to guess, or they factor into the plans.
Yeah, I mean, and some of those, I mean, you say sophomore group, that's by their eligibility.
Sure.
You know, in reality, three of those are juniors, actually, grade-wise, so they had redshirt years their first year. So Anna Champagne, she's been a starter from the day she walked in. And she's a starter because when she's just a pure competitor. When she gets into games, she just competes. She's not afraid to get physical. She's not afraid to attack a situation and get stuck in on a tackle. She was better this year than she was the year before, just a little more confident, more comfortable on the ball, better in her one-on-one defending. You know, I still anticipate she's going to get better each year. All right, so I'm looking forward to seeing what she looks like this next year, but she's been really good for us. Liz Reese, you know, we do a lot of one-on-ones early on in our defending, and we learned, you know, that first spring I was here, how good Liz was defending one-on-one, and that really earned her time on the field immediately in that spring, and then it just built from there. And she's probably our best one-on-one defender, just outright defender. And then, you know, we're constantly trying to encourage her to get forward a little bit more. It's hard to be a wide back on Kat's side and get forward because Kat gets the ball and she's so good going one-on-one and she's so fast, you can't catch her. So you want to get forward and go around her and join on, and you just can't, right? So that's just reality being on that side. So her role ended up being much more, you know, defensive one-on-ones and then delivering more balls. I think as we go forward, she's probably going to be able to get forward a little bit more this year. So she's done really well as well. You know, Molly, I think Molly had a bit of a coming out this year where she got, you know, quite a few more minutes on the front line. She became part of the rotation in the 9 spot, you know, scored some goals. I think she had 5 or 6 goals on the year, right? So nice year for her as well. And was there another one you brought up that we had talked about?
You could throw out Abby Stowick, Savannah Seaver, Jenna Angelic, Peyton Green. The list goes on and on.
Yeah,
with that sophomore group.
Yeah, Jenny was terrific this year. You know, she's a little bit of a nervous Nelly where she's so concerned about making sure she doesn't make a mistake and contributing that it almost harms her freedom of play a little bit. But I really think she had a very good year this year. She became a starter and a mainstay in the midfield. She's a ball hunter, which you got to have one of those in there. She improved in the air with her head and she did better on the ball this year. And she's another one I anticipate is going to make another jump in her game. I think Abby and Savannah both found themselves in a spot where they're counted on a little bit more, and I think it made them nervous, right? So I anticipate they're going to have a jump in their game as they get a little more confident and comfortable. I think they'll do better that way. Peyton, she had a slow start to the season and then was outstanding at the end, right? And I think it was she was injured last summer, right? I didn't know that until we got into preseason. I discovered later that she had broken something. So she was injured and out for a while last summer. And then, so it took her a while to get her game back on. And really, it was her focus she had to get more than anything else. And once that dialed back in, she was quite good. And I think she'll have a good year next year, too.
Now, you lose a quality group of players that are going to be gone after what this past 2023 season. How do you go about, you know, filling those voids, but also what do they mean to this program's success?
You know, they were outstanding. I mean, obviously their success over their 4 years tells a story. You know, Kendall and what she did in the last 2 years and her getting first team all conference as a goalkeeper. I mean, she was a wall back there. She was unbelievable in her shot blocking. And she did that coming off a significant injury last spring where she was out the entire spring and all summer. Right, and responded well, and that foot of hers was still bothering her throughout the season, so it impacted her kicking game and some things like that. But her shot stopping second to none. Obviously, Claire at center back, one of our captains, so good on the ball. She was our commander in the back. Great communication, positive individual, somebody that everyone responded to really well. Brooke Parnello on the right is a proven winner, just pure and simple. She's a proven winner. Her attacking is what impacted so well. And then she had a goal in the semis of the tournament and a goal in the final, the game winner in the final. Both of those two we anticipate are going pro. One of them signed with an agent already, and the other one is still kind of going through the process of it, deciding. But we expect both of them to be pros for a little while until they pursue their natural academic career. Kat on the front line was obviously an impact every year she was here. I mean, just an incredibly dangerous player at all times. I thought we got quite a bit out of Emma as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a lot to turn over, but that's also what you plan for as a coach, right? You don't want to have major rebuild years. You have to have years where, all right, we're losing these people, but we're gaining these people, and these others are going to step up a little bit more. So, while those are painful losses, I have high hopes for the team coming in this fall because I believe what we're bringing in coupled with what we return is going to be very, very good.
And it's already been announced that you have a trio of transfers coming in, which includes Josie Kelderman transferring in from Marquette. You have Bethany Moser, who was a two-year starting goalkeeper with Ball State. Zoe Pagels, who did some damage up in Green Bay. How do you see those three fitting in?
Yeah, well, we've got Zoe and Josie are here already training with us, and we brought both of those in to kind of bolster the front line to reduce some of the impact of losing Kat and Emma, and I think they're both going to be terrific. Zoe was somebody we played against last 2 years, and in both years, in each game, we had concerns dealing with her, and she's hard to handle one-on-one. You almost have to have a second player at all times, so now we've added someone like that in. Josie's a player who could play a couple different spots, but she's explosively quick and very fast as a whole. We brought her in to play up top as well and to join into that front line kind of powerhouse that we want to have, where we want to have 5 to 6 players that can rotate throughout a game because the physical demands on a forward is so high from a sprint perspective. And we think she's one that's going to step in and really help us as well. Bethany is, you know, we won't know until we get her, but here's a, you know, 2-time starter at another Division I program coming to us. And with the hole that Kendall leaves, you know, we expect she's going to be somebody to challenge for that spot right away.
So that's the current state of affairs for the women's soccer team. Well, I want to talk about you too, as in your soccer career, as we go on with this Pouncecast podcast. From a coaching standpoint, you played soccer first in Indiana, collegiately, went on to play pro. When did coaching enter into your background?
I kind of fell into it. So I had, you know, I couldn't get a visa in Norway when I was playing, right? So I was there playing, and I was there past the 3-month period. So I was there about 4.5 months. So I was a very nervous, illegal alien in Norway. And I came back home, and there was no soccer in the U.S. other than a dying indoor league, which I really didn't enjoy as much. So there wasn't anything for me to step in and play. So I was just doing whatever odd job you can do. And my brother was in Boise, Idaho at the time. I was in Seattle with my parents, and he's like, hey, move here. You know, we'll live together again and find a job. So I moved over there and started searching for a job. And while I was looking for a job, I started like working at a sports store and the local city soccer league found out I was there and hired me just to do like training sessions every night with every team throughout the league and write up an evaluation when I was done. So I was doing that while looking for other jobs, a full-time job. And, you know, I gave them an evaluation, how I felt that the, you know, the girls' side was greatly neglected in Boise, that there was, you know, no clubs, no pro coaches, no, it was all parents coaching. There's nothing wrong with that, but there wasn't a curriculum. There wasn't a anything put together, whereas the boys' side had all of the clubs and the pro coaches and all of that. And I just felt there was an inequity and it wasn't right. And some people listened to me and came back and said, how would you fix it? And I came up with a plan for them and they came back and wanted to hire me. And I kind of just fell into that role. And, you know, a year later, we formed an all-girls club and ran that for 5 years, and it was highly successful, and that got me hired off into the college ranks.
Yeah, eventually at Cal first, and there you won a school record, 124 games, went to 8 NCAA tournaments. What did you learn? How did you grow as a coach from that experience, and what made those teams consistently so successful?
Yeah, you know, Cal is an interesting place. It's a, I felt like it's a highly recruitable place in the state of California, specifically with the academic standards. And it's a unique campus and a unique Berkeley's a unique kind of place. It's a lot of people with a lot of opinions and not afraid to express them. And you learn very quickly to be open-minded about other people's opinion and letting them have it. And it became, in my mind, really recruitable in California. So I felt what we did well is we really dominated the recruiting in California. So when it was players looking at schools, they were looking at Stanford, us, Santa Clara, and UCLA, maybe USC, right? We were in that mix the entire time. And when you're in that mix and you're in the state of California, you're getting really good players. So we started putting together class after class that were very talented, and we built that program. And, you know, when I left there, we were a Sweet 16 program, and we're about to welcome a girl named Alex Morgan. So I felt like we were a Final Four destined program, to be honest. And then life had other plans, so things changed.
I was going to ask you about the Alex Morgan thing and being part of your last recruiting class or one of your last recruiting classes. And you'd go on to move to Arizona State a couple of seasons as the associate head coach at Washington State. How do those stops maybe help continue to mold you into the coach that you are today?
Yeah, so Arizona State, I had to go there, and I found myself in a much more challenging environment where they did not have quite the reputation in terms of recruitability of athletes. So I couldn't walk in someone's, you know, walk into someone's house and immediately have them highly interested. I had to try and convince them. And, you know, boy, 99 out of 100 times if UCLA or even Cal came calling, I lost that player, right? So I really had to create a new niche. It took a little while to build it. We never really had the luxury of having that kind of background to help, so it was more challenging. And I had to then convert what I'd done at Cal and figure out how to replicate that and replicate it in a way that made sense for Arizona State and that program. And I thought we did well. I think you know, we had an extremely talented team in 2015. We had a player who'd score a goal every single game, and then she got injured, was out for a while, and that hurt our season quite a bit. She ended up being a 8-year pro in the NWSL, and I mean, really talented player. But I felt like we had it going pretty good for a while there, and you know, I had evolved a bit as a coach, and that helped. And then when I moved on from there, I went to back into the club world, just because 21 years in the college Division I Pac-12 was grueling, and I needed to take a breath and try something new. And spent 2.5-3 years at Legends in Southern Cal, and really felt like that kicked my own development up a notch in terms of learning the youth game again, having to put together an entire curriculum all the way through again. I took a U.S. soccer course called Academy Director's Course that was a year round. We went on 7 trips. We were in hotels 40 nights. It was a hand-picked group of 16 directors across the country. It was just an amazing experience, but it was also like a master's degree in being an academy director, and it really dialed me in more on specifically knowing exactly what I wanted in my team and in the way I wanted things done, which grew me as a coach. And then you know, after a few years of that, I wanted to get back into the college ranks. My friend at Washington State, Todd Schulenberger, had been trying to get me up there, and about that third year, you know, I decided to take the plunge and go up and join him and be an assistant. And I'm glad I did, because the way he views the game and coaches the game is really different than mine. And whenever you get to work with somebody different than you, it grows you, because it adds a different element and a different mindset. And I don't do everything he does, but I was able to grab certain things and say, this is a great addition to what I already do. Right. And I think it made me better. So, you know, all of those little stops on the way, as it should for anybody's career, you know, as I grew in every stop, you know, I now feel I'm at my best as a coach, right, at least in this current moment, and I'm hoping I continue to keep growing.
And I'm sure you've gotten this question a lot, but with your background being out west, how do you end up back here in the Midwest and here at Milwaukee?
Yeah, the name Milwaukee from the soccer side and the success it's had over a sustained period of time was highly attractive. I didn't know as much about the city of Milwaukee, and I have now come in and discovered it's a bit of a hidden gem, and people that have been here or that live here absolutely love it, and that came across as I was researching and looking into it. But the main draw was a sustained success, right? There is something about this soccer program here that has a culture of winning, right? And it's year in and year out, and now that I'm in it, I can see it. And I can see it in our players, but I also have to make sure I continue to build it and reinforce it.
I was going to say, is there pressure there to kind of, you know, carry on the legacy that is?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I always have pressure on myself anyway. I mean, there's nobody that's going to expect more than I will, right? So, you know, a lot of that is internal, but yeah, there's an external pressure. I mean, the alumni want you to do well. I mean, you know, we've heard enough disappointment in our Marquette loss, you know, but I look at that and go, well, yeah, we were still 12-3 in the national playoffs, and I think they were not that. So while we would want that win, I still am pretty happy with the year. So, you know, I understand the rivalry. But, yeah, I think there's some pressure that comes just, you know, from some of the alumni and people around the program. But most of our pressure is internal. It comes out of us. You know, our athletic department's outstanding. You know, they love that we're winning, but they're not applying pressure on us. They're letting us do our thing, which is probably why we're able to be as successful as we are.
Take us behind the scenes. You prepare now for your third season at the helm. For you and your staff, what takes place here during the offseason? How do you guys spend these months in preparation for a new season?
Yeah, I mean, it's the normal stuff that everybody's doing. It's putting together schedules and planning, but it's also us trying to figure out, all right, here's where we are. This is what we saw in the fall. What do we need to do so that when we play Wisconsin in the playoffs again, we beat them, right? What do we need to do so if we go to Arkansas, we're more of a dead even game, or Notre Dame, we're more of a dead even game? So what are the development points that we need to focus on? And that's what we're doing right now. And that's really what we're plugging in with our players, is it's all about, look, we need to do these things to achieve these goals. And that's our mindset this spring. We've already identified with them what we need to work on and what our focus is. And then every training we go out and say, this is this piece of that focus, right? And then we get after it. So that's kind of where we are right this minute. And then recruiting, 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 recruiting.
How's the recruiting process changed over the years for you?
I think it's been good here. You know, this class we have coming in, we're really excited about. We're putting the bow on the 25 class right now as well. That's going to be a smaller class, but we like what's coming in. You know, we're just building our way through that. I think the hard part is the landscape across the country with all this NIL stuff has greatly changed it, and to me, to the negative. You know, you've got people buying players at this point. They're not choosing based on the right fit for them. They're choosing based on how much money I'm going to get while they're in there. So it's creating a separation, you know. So what does that mean for us? Well, it's sort of like when I went to Arizona State. Okay, I'm not going to attract some of these players that are going to go to Cal, which is the place I built, right? So I need to find my own niche. We're doing the same thing here. We're finding our own niche. We're going out and finding the areas where we can connect, where players have come here and had a successful experience. Players who have played for me have had a successful experience, and finding those coaches who believe in that. And then with the number of players now, I mean, we'll have put 3 players in the pros in the last 2 years. And then you add the years before me, there's an awful lot of Milwaukee players that have gone on to play professionally. And so any player that wants to be a pro, we're a great place to go to. Right? It's a fun environment. It's a winning environment. It's a teacher-focused staff. So we are very much about development and teaching the entire way. And we have a good relationship with our athletes. So inevitably, our players are getting to their senior year. They found success. They're much, much better than they came in. They're in a professional environment, and they are loving it. They're having fun. They don't want to be done. Right. And that, what a great time to go on and play. Right. Maybe you play 1 year, maybe you play 2 years, maybe you have a 10-year career.
Let me wrap it up by just talking about the here and now. And you touched on this already, but, you know, before you know it, the spring season will be here. So what's the approach for this spring season? What do you hope to accomplish during that spring season?
Well, we want to see, it's spring is always opportunity. So for our players' sake, it's opportunity. It's players that maybe didn't get as much time in the fall. They're getting time in the spring. I play everybody in the spring. That's always been my philosophy because I believe it's opportunity-based. So it gives them a chance to get out there and show us what they can do, right? And for them to get more comfortable on the ball, like the Abbeys and the Savannahs. And, the, you know, I really want them to take hold of a position and own it and really step into themselves and get more confident. So that's a big part of what I think the players get out of it. And then what we want besides that is we want to work on a couple aspects of our game, and we want that part of the game to improve so that we can carry that into next fall.
Can't wait, and hard to believe the new soccer season will be here before you know it. Coach Boyd, as always, thanks a lot for your time. All the best this offseason.
I appreciate it. Thanks for talking to me.
That is Coach Boyd, and thanks for joining us for this edition of the Pounce Cast.